Welcome to All the Horrible Things, episode 77. The date? It's probably, are we dropping this on Black Friday?
Yes, we are.
Okay, well, happy shopping, everyone. Frankly, we could have talked about, what was it, that Black Friday movie that came out like 2 years ago with Bruce Campbell?
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah, that was a fun.
If you haven't seen
movie.
It, people should check that one out, but we're not talking about that one today. Instead, we're kind of doing like a Thanksgiving feast episode, if you will. We're going to talk about why we're thankful for horror, the cast, talk about what got us into horror to begin with, what we're excited about that's coming up in the near future in terms of horror, and then we got a special request to talk about movies that would get people more into horror that aren't huge horror fans, to try yep. and like draw them in, establish why horror is a genre worth looking into. If you don't really got the time to watch a lot of stuff, I could see why people might not put horror at the top of their genre list if you don't got the time for it, right? What would you say, like, other than horror, what's your next genre in line of watchery?
You know, I think that's changed over the years. I think it was comedy for a long time, and I think we've seen a major dip in comedy because it's really hard to get those made, believe it or not.
Yeah.
You don't see comedies going to the movie the theater. You see them, you know, streaming.
Right.
And I found that what I really gravitate towards now outside of horror are action movies again.
Really?
I just find them to be...
Is there one of note that you could hit us with that's really hit the spot?
Well... Yeah, and this one isn't necessarily new, but I think if like you were looking for, you know, like say you're a fan of like the John Wick movies, for example.
Sure.
I would say something that's really good to check out is The Raid.
Okay, I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
Which is a fantastic.
Is it foreign?
Fantastic. Yes.
Okay.
I believe they filmed it in Indonesia, like in Jakarta. It is so good. It kind of reminds me of a horror movie in the sense that it's contained in one location, and it's about the police entering this high rise of just, you know, villains, and it's like going from floor to floor. It's super well directed and well choreographed, but yeah, I really find that.
So you need your, you know, adrenaline going, it seems, to really get excited about a movie.
Yes.
Not the drama. Are you watching the movies for, like, the Oscars religiously? Is this... No.
Not anymore. Mm-hmm. Not anymore. I really don't feel that it's as accurate as... Well, maybe it's never been that accurate. But I guess I'm just a little tired of the whole hype around it and, like, that feeling that, like, if you didn't see this movie, that you didn't see the best movie that year. And with streaming, I think... You know, things have to change as far as like how we treat movies.
Yeah.
You know, like there's that rule. I think that needs to be released in a movie theater for even an X amount of days for it to be
considered now. Yeah,
looked at.
Right.
Yeah, but I also find that there are many indie films that may never get a big screen release. So my whole point is.
That it's elitist.
I don't believe...
You don't feel that it's actually...
Yeah, exactly.
Accurately assessing. Yeah. It's such a subjective thing anyways, in the way that they kind of like...
Correct.
Promote themselves.
And
it kind of takes away from any genuine truth.
Yes, and I also think that it's always like the same people.
Right.
Last year was a great... to contradict myself, last year with Everything Everywhere All at Once...
Mm-hmm.
That deserved like every Oscar, and it got a majority of them. But to me, that was a low budget indie film. Like they're lucky that got the release and the acknowledgement that the other films got. But that's I think I like the fresh take on cinema as opposed to, not to knock Martin Scorsese here, but I don't need to see
Killers of the Flower
the same directors
Moon.
Over and over.
I do want to see it. I'm sure it's good, but it's, yeah, one of those things
so do
where
I
might have been compelled in the past to have to see it in the movie theater. Not the case anymore, certainly for dramas. I feel like I'm going to the theater for stuff that you want to see on the big screen because it makes sense. Horror can do that because you have that experience with
yes.
the audience. It's a much more visceral experience. And as you noted with comedy, I completely agree. I used to kind of put that up there, but you can't when they don't make them. I mean, I did just recently watch Please Don't Destroy's Foggy Mountain, Treasure of Foggy Mountain. Really funny.
Yeah, so did
that
I.
would have been so fun
really
to
funny.
See in the cinema and to see Conan O'Brien act for the first time as a character. It was such a blast. But I think that's a
yes.
nice segue into why we're so thankful for horror and why horror is really kind of doing it for us now in this middle age of ours. And it's kind of rooted in how I think I first started getting into horror via comedy horror. And I would argue now I
yes.
remain in horror because I feel like horror, the best of horror for me, it's become more realistic. You know, it's more drama horror, I feel, are the ones that really grip me in a way that, sure, I still love the monster features, but if you have something like we've talked about in the past, See No Evil or whatever, something that could actually happen that's horrific, it's at the heart it's a drama, but the what's happening is so horrific, that to me is what like has kept me rooted in adulthood. But looking back, I want to think back to your youths. What were the horror media that really kind of started to get your bubbles popping?
Absolutely. And I think I may have told this story briefly, but I think one of the first blockbuster horror movies I saw was A Nightmare on Elm Street, and it was because a babysitter let me watch it, and that was what hooked me. I also, I'm wearing my Chucky shirt because Chucky was huge for me as well. I think it was also fun that it took place in Chicago.
Yeah.
It made it feel like, it was a character. Chicago was part of it.
True. Have you been keeping up with the series? Just a quick diverge. The Chucky series?
I haven't started this most recent
okay.
season,
okay.
but I have seen everything else up until then.
Because it's still getting good reviews. I want to get back into it, honestly. But you're right. Chucky as a kid
yeah.
was one of those
yeah.
ones. When I was young, really scared the crap out of me. But once I, kind of entered the teen years, I could kind of get past it. It's funny you mentioned Nightmare on Elm Street too, because I was thinking back and going to the movie store, in the VHS, the covers and how some of them really kind of ingrained in your brain. And it was before you'd even seen
mm-hmm.
them, you were
mm-hmm.
kind of petrified. And I remember The Nightmare on Elm Street. I don't know if you remember the VHS cover of it, but it's not a picture, a photograph. It's a painting or a drawing of Nancy's character
yeah.
with Freddy's claws hovering over her while she's sleeping.
Yeah.
And for some reason, the artistic rendering of the claws were way scarier than I think it would have been had you seen his real claws from the film. I just remember that really
Agreed.
Affecting me as a kid.
I think that was also a time, though, when a lot of care and art went into movie
right.
posters, and I think they all were... they weren't using Photoshop to create these posters. Everything was sort of, painted by hand. And the funny thing about that was, that could help or hurt a movie. Because
right.
How many times did the poster look awesome and then you rented the movie and it was garbage?
Right.
And you're like, wow, man, that poster really tricked me.
It's a lost
the poster
art.
Tricked
you're,
me.
You're right. It was a means of selling the film in a way we don't really get anymore when we don't
yeah.
have physical media. I mean, you'll get... Often,
yeah,
an
that
icon,
was marketing.
Frame of the film now. There's not that thought that's put into what image is going to be representative. Just to name a couple other VHS covers that really got to me. I don't know if you remember the Chopping Mall one, but it's a bag of human
oh, yeah.
body parts.
Oh, yeah.
Scared
the
hands. Me. I didn't see this one.
Yeah.
But I think it was just strictly because of... my fear. I used to have recurring dreams about alligators coming out of the toilet and getting me.
I remember
but
that
you, you've
story
heard
you
of
told
ghoulies?
Me.
There's this little
oh,
green,
I love ghoulies.
Little
I
ghoulies,
love ghoulies
thing, and apparently there's only one scene of it coming out of the toilet. But that's what the cover is. It's this
it
little
is.
Green. What is it? I don't even know what it is. It's hideous looking. But like,
yeah, they were like demons conjured up during a like a seance. Yeah.
But as a kid, you know, that's your tenderest zone, and to think this little green monster is gonna pop up and, you know, scratch at things is not fun. Yeah. And even like just the monkey shines. Do you remember the monkey shines? It's just, you know, the little monkey
the poster,
doll, but
yeah.
It has like a straight barber's razor dripping blood. For some reason, that just, it got me. So I would say I'm thankful that horror back in the day used to use art in a way that I don't feel like other genres did, like that got you to rent it, you know? I'm trying to think back on other like
definitely
drama VHS covers that really stick out, and I can't really come up with anything.
No, I think you're absolutely correct there, and I think we've almost hit a I'm not saying like everything's been done, but there are so many movie posters out there that now replicate those old posters to try to like resonate something with you. And I think it's just, you know, totally overused. It's really hard to, you know, decipher which movie is which now, because they all just sort of blend together. And not to mention that they are pumping out a ton of horror now.
Yes. Yeah, it's the most profitable. You spend, you know, the least money and get the most profit off of it. Especially after, like, Marvel's just canned, what, $250 million and it made only 50 or something. It's just, like, it's so safe making horror, I feel like, because you're bringing in audiences and you're not spending half that money. And I remember when I was younger, even now I still try to do it, but they're not as affecting. When you go to the movie theater, I would want to get there a little early and just look at all the new posters that popped up, you know, that are all over in the marquees. And it's not something that's appreciated anymore, I don't think. Doesn't get you as excited about it. I mean, granted, everyone with their phones now can watch
right
the preview anytime they want. But yeah, it's a lost art.
I can think of another major gateway for me for horror, and it was probably even before I watched, you know, Freddy Krueger and Chucky, but my dad introduced me to Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Oh, nice.
And that was, I mean, we used to watch a lot of Abbott and Costello and Laurel and Hardy together, but then when he showed me Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, it introduced me to the Universal horror monsters, and like that was like, the blending, that is like the ultimate horror comedy movie, but it was such an introduction into like this dark castle where, you know, Frankenstein's laboratory is at, and it was magical.
Did I mention, I can't remember if I mentioned seeing Frankenstein Ballet at the Joffrey Ballet a few weeks ago.
Recently.
Yes.
Right?
And it was
you
awesome.
You did not mention it, but I've seen... Yeah, ironically, I've seen the poster.
It was really... I've never seen a
ballet. Ironically, I've seen the poster on the bus, yeah.
Ever. I never have had the desire to see the ballet. I mean, part of me was like, okay, that's on your bucket list. You gotta see a ballet before... Even when I was, like, a kid, I don't think I went to the Nutcracker or anything along those lines. But then, like, when you see Frankenstein as a ballet, that's, you know, that's the sort of thing that's gonna finally get me... into that Joffrey Ballet, and it was cool, man. I mean, just the venue itself, I'd never been there, and the way that they pulled it off, it was pretty effective and true to the novel. I was really pleased with it. It was fun. I don't know if I'm gonna go back to a ballet that's not like Dracula or something along those lines.
Well,
but
let me ask you something that's very ignorant. Was there dialogue, or is this completely dancing?
No dialogue.
Just,
no
dialogue. Sort of telling the story through physical. Now, that's
dance.
Very cool. That's very. The challenge there, the challenge is incredibly difficult. And you're saying it's, you know, very true to the novel. That's art.
Yes. You know what? If I wasn't as familiar with the novel and all the incarnations on film, I think I might have had trouble. You know what I mean? I think I might have had trouble following what was going on, but I knew... like scene for scene what it was trying to represent, what was going on within the, I mean, there were some alterations, but for the most part, it's just really effective, specifically, you know, when Frankenstein's monster comes to life for the first time, and like, I don't know if you remember Robert De Niro's version, but Kenneth Branagh's kind of like holding him up for it. Just the way they did it was so fluid and beautiful. I was pleasantly surprised with it. But
that's great.
Yeah, those you can't that's go great. Wrong with the Universal horror villains. Which one gets you the most? I think you mentioned it was Dracula in the past. Am I wrong?
I'd say it is Dracula, and we talked a little bit about this on the Last Voyage of the Demeter episode, right. But it is such a great, you know, cornerstone of Universal. I mean, you know, showing Dracula, it just like this whole door opening to a monster universe, which is really unfortunate that they didn't get to explore that more, because I would say, and we can segue here in a little bit, but I could say that if they were going to successfully bring Universal's horror monster like series, like they do with Marvel Cinematic mm-hmm. Universe, that would probably be even more powerful of bringing new horror fans into the genre than, you know, seeing, you know,
I mean, yeah, people a lot of these independent got the Marvel fatigue up. Now. I think that would have been awesome had they pulled it off. Who do you blame? Because I blame Tom Cruise in The Mummy. Because that was supposed to be the flagship, right? The big money one initially.
Correct. Mummy.
Not good.
The Mummy. And no, and like they even teased, you know, Russell Crowe, I think, is Mr. Hyde in it. But I would argue that it was probably Tom Cruise's fault. because that man is really great at action, but that movie was too much of an action movie. He was trying to make
it
what
was scary.
The Mummy was in Mission Impossible.
Exactly. Right. Yes. It should have been rooted more in horror, where I think they got it right, but I don't think necessarily this was one that was going to be part of the verse or this incarnation, was that new Invisible Man, which is awesome. It's so freaking good.
So good.
Wait, I mean, the Kevin Bacon one, not great. I enjoyed it when I was in my teens or whatever, when it came out, The Hollow Man. But the Invisible Man, there's a lot that can be played with there, and the deeper meanings of that one, certainly, like the misogyny and domestic abuse that the newest one deals with. Amazing. If you haven't seen Invisible Man, that to me, I think, has become my favorite of the Universal Monsters, I would argue.
Yeah. But yeah, I really think that with the whole, it wouldn't be Marvel, but with that Marvel treatment, it really would have created a very cool landscape for young children to start becoming horror fans.
Completely. I think
my point
boils down to the casting. I don't think Tom Cruise is appealing to an audience that you're going to build like they did with the Marvels at this point. I know he's still making crazy money with Mission Impossible and Top Guns and stuff, but I don't see Xennials or even Millennials for that point really getting excited to go see his stuff anymore. That's not to say he doesn't make good stuff, but even Russell Crowe I love, but I don't think he was the right choice to get somebody excited about a verse that's going to move forward with him. I feel like they were appealing to the wrong audience.
Yeah, and as we're saying this out loud, I think it just sort of hit me what the real problem was, is that Tom Cruise cannot not be the hero.
Yeah.
And he was trying too hard to be the hero of this movie. And in these movies, the Universal horror movies, you can't have a hero.
Right.
Because we're supposed to be kind of rooting for the monster here. And the only hero ever introduced in this, you know, world is Van Helsing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole other story, and I'm sure they would have done it. But Tom Cruise went in there thinking that he could have been larger than the monster, and you can't be.
No. I mean, he's so short, there's no way he could be larger than the monster.
Yeah, literally and figuratively, yes. Yes, but we don't need that. We don't need that. We wanted to root for the Mummy.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, and honestly, I know there was a woman that was the Mummy in it. We spent a lot of time on the Mummy, but the plot really didn't resonate with me. I can't remember much of it other than maybe a couple of the CGI effects that were cool. And maybe Jake Johnson. I remember him like being one of the only good parts of it.
Yeah.
Yes. But to backtrack a little bit, when I was a kid, I would say, as noted, that it's the comedy horror that really got me into it. And stuff like Are You Afraid of the Dark, which we talked about before.
Yes.
You said The Crypt Keeper. You used to get a little dabbling of that when you were younger.
Yes, Tales
of the Crypt.
Tales from the Crypt was was also, like, once I was hooked on horror and I found Tales from the Crypt, and it was a weekly thing on HBO, and it was on HBO, so it was really wasn't really holding back. And we can bring this up later this season when we talk about Christmas horror, but the introductory episode of Tales from the Crypt was about an escaped lunatic who is dressed as Santa Claus. And that really got me excited as a kid.
Yeah, no, it's...
The axe-wielding Santa Claus really did it for me, and I didn't think that I'd ever want to see an evil Santa, but I think that's what was so special about the horror genre, is that you can get away with doing this stuff that's
right.
So against the grain. And you're right, Are You Afraid of the Dark was up there as well.
A staple. And that wasn't too comedy, though. I mean, there's episodes of Gilbert Gottfried and stuff. He's got some good one-liners, but I wouldn't necessarily associate that as comedy horror. What about Eerie Indiana? Do you remember that? Starred the kid who's the star of the first Hocus
Vaguely.
Pocus. I remember that being really fun and atmospheric. Kind of like a kid's Twilight Zone sort of thing. Certainly the Twilight Zone I did enjoy growing up. Did you read any horror as a kid? Because I'm remembering in my, I would say preteen years, I was big into these kind of pulpy, like R.L. Stein. And there's one I remember really specifically called The Xmas Killer by Patricia Windsor. But they were these smaller novelettes, sort of like pulpy horror stories that I remember that I would read a lot of those in like 6th, 7th, and 8th grade for sure.
No, interestingly enough, I think Goosebumps may have been the extent of it. And I didn't really start reading horror until maybe college, when I came across this writer, Jack Ketchum, who is like one of the most diabolical evil writers. Like, even Stephen King is like, that guy is scary.
Really? Well, what's his most notable concept?
It's kind of influenced a ton of movies. It's called The Off Season, and it is about these people who are in a cabin in the middle of nowhere, and they come across like these people who are trying to break in. It's like almost like The Hills Have Eyes. The Hills Have Eyes was very inspired by Jack Ketchum's story about these, you know, inbred monsters who are breaking into the home and basically trying to destroy everything about your perfect little life. But a lot of movies have sort of borrowed from Jack Ketchum's Off Season.
Interesting. I would also argue, I remember sixth grade, did a talent show. I was Gomez Adams. We did the theme song. Adams Family, I think, was a big part. Those movies were a perfect time when I was a kid coming up to like really start to embrace. I certainly wasn't a goth kid in any sense of the word. But
no.
I started to appreciate the darker side of things. I think thanks to the Adams Family, maybe... to a lesser degree, Ghostbusters, because they're both comedy horrors, but, you know, I feel they have different tones in a way. I remember as a kid, my uncle Pat always talked about War of the Worlds, like the old one, even before Tom Cruise's version. He was obsessed with that. That really kind of got me, the sci-fi horror fan in me percolating. What about E.T.? I had one of my sisters I think to this day remains petrified of that little turd alien.
Yeah. It's very wholesome. I mean, I think that's a really great entry level, but to me, that's not horror at all.
Really? Okay. Even when he's being all dissected and stuff at the end?
No, still just sci-fi, and I don't think it was...
Kid, I could see it being horror, because... You know, he's not pretty. It's not a pretty alien, you know? He's cute-ish, I guess, but I don't know.
Did you ever watch on Sunday nights, ABC used to have the movie of the week?
Okay, yeah.
So a movie they played when I was a child, and I think you could finally watch it on Disney Plus, but was, is it just called Boogity? Mr. Boogity?
Oh, okay. Sounds familiar. I don't remember it though. No.
Because that was huge for me. It was just, you know, like ABC. It was still Disney owned film at least, but that was about like a ghost in a house, and that I really loved that. And I think that was another thing that really, you know, just stuck with me. But there was things like that were like made for TV movies, like The Lady in White was another made for TV movie
familiar.
That was really creepy. Yeah, I think.
I know I brought it up before, but The Willies, of course, an anthology movie. I just remember having a sleepover, and we were all just like so grossed out when they blew up the dog in the microwave. Right. And then, of course, for people who don't remember who watched the Luger show, it's Donkey Lips has his own featured story on that. So I remember that's the sort of thing that started to get me into it, because you could just feel the way it impacts the audience and the people that you're watching it with in a different way. It's more, horror is more of the interactive, you know, genre in a strange way, because it does get your adrenaline pumping and you just get your blood moving, you know? And certainly, back to the books, one of the books I read the most, and of course I brought it up a bajillion times, is Jurassic Park. And when you have a baby eaten by little compies at the beginning, that is scary horror to me, you know? Certainly when I read it for the first time at 13 or 14, that's an attention getter. And then, you know, later in the book, stuff that doesn't happen in the movie, Dr. Wu gets gutted by the raptors. That's all very visceral. There's a baby T-Rex that just, like, toys with one of the characters in it. And it's so grisly and gruesome. I couldn't resist, you know? I remember go ahead.
No, I was gonna talk about just more the idea of like anthology stuff, and every weekend as a kid, I would watch Monster Vision, hosted by Joe Bob Briggs, which is, you know, brought back to life on Shudder now. And then on Saturday nights, I used to watch USA's Up All Night, hosted by, oh my goodness, what was her name? You know, she's a beautiful blonde woman. As a teenager, you're like, this woman is...
Yes, you gotta watch that.
Remarkable. But I used to love watching the movies there.
Is it Rhonda Shear? Is that
they were real... Say that again? Rhonda Shear.
Rhonda Shear. Okay.
Rhonda Shear. Rhonda Shear hosted Up All Night, and it felt very taboo. Like, I wasn't supposed to be watching this.
Yeah.
Everyone was asleep. I was downstairs and turning on the stuff that, like, you're not supposed to be watching this, Chris. And that was very exciting to me. That, that not only was this, again, this beautiful blonde woman introducing raunchy horror movies to me, it was also like, you're not supposed to be doing this.
I think you're onto something there. Certainly, in my formative years, I think a lot of it had to do with the titillating nature of horror. You know what I mean? It, like I said, does stuff to your body and your mind that other genres don't. And that's intriguing. Yep. It gets you in places you haven't been. Just a side note, were you a Count Chocula, a Frankenberry, or a Boo Berry man?
Count Chocula.
Count Chocula through and through. I like Count Chocula mixed with Frankenberry, for the record. That chocolate strawberry combo is great, but to talk my mom into buying both of them for that was very, very rare.
Yeah, good luck.
To say the
beggars
least.
Can't be choosers. You get one, and you better be happy with it.
What about X-Files for you growing up? Did that kind of get your juices flowing for horror?
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed X-Files. And again, it's more of that anthology style. I like the idea of like a new story every week. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea that, you know, the X-Files always made me feel like maybe there are weird things out there that can't be explained. And, we talked about the just aliens in general lately. I think the ones about aliens always sort of just jumped out more. But
100%.
Yeah, but there was some really great just like monster episodes too. I'm due for a rewatch. I mean, that seems very rewatchable.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Would you rather them reboot, or would you rather do a rewatch? Do you think they could do it better now? Is there anything that is X-Files-esque now?
I think X-Files could come back under the right circumstances, and I think for one, it needs to go to a streamer. It needs to be able to do things that basic television couldn't do. You need to be able to push it the boundaries a little bit more, a bigger budget. I bet you can get a bigger budget, say like on Netflix over Fox. And I think you need the right mind behind it. I know Jordan Peele wouldn't do it. He already tried to bring back Twilight Zone. I don't even know if that's still going on.
No,
somebody like that.
That would be cool.
Yeah, I think
I'm glad you brought up Jordan, because honestly, I think what we were initially asked is what movies will get you into horror and why horror sort of thing. And we brought it up before, but it's just horror, I feel like, is the best avenue to dissect these societal issues, but in an interesting way. You know what I mean? Okay, I sure. can watch Selma to deal with racism. 100% is going to be a profound experience, but I can also watch Get Out and have a little more exciting of a experience while simultaneously dealing with these underlying issues that should be dealt with. I just find, you know, when you put it in that platform versus something that's, you know, just straight drama, it's gonna appeal to me more.
Right. Right.
What would you say are the movies that have that extra meaning that would be a good gateway for people to get into horror?
Well, I think the obvious one is Night of the Living Dead. I think George Romero did a really great job of, you know, dealing with social issues while, you know, under the design of a zombie film. Other movies.
Well, okay, there's a quick question, though, because that's definitely on my list, though. The Deads. Would you have them watch that first one, though? Like, now, I know it's a classic, it's amazing, but someone you're trying to get into horror, wouldn't you steer them toward Sarah Polley's Dawn of the Dead? You don't think it's doing that same meaningful stuff?
The Zack Snyder one?
Yeah.
The 2007
that's so good.
Zack Snyder.
And I do think it does have stuff, maybe not as overt, but...
Well, for starters, I think zombie movies are probably an easier buy-in, you know? Like, I think people are like, zombie movies have been around for a long time, and I think they're not as, like... I mean, it certainly can be graphic, but, like, if I'm going to tell somebody a zombie movie to get them into the horror, I would go Shaun of the Dead.
I think I'd go 28 Days Later to get him into it, you know, unless somebody's looking for that comedy horror. But if you, to me, that's Shaun of the Dead. Yeah. Funniest zombie movie ever. 28 Days Later. It just, you know, I remember every scene from it. And
I know
there's Mara,
that it's not really,
that's her favorite horror film of all time. And she's not a big horror fan. So like it does stick, I think, in a way that other ones don't.
Some of the sticklers out there are going to say 28 Days Later isn't a zombie movie. It's an outbreak movie. Those aren't real zombies. They're running. They run. They don't act like the George Romero zombies.
Do they eat flesh? I can't remember if they eat flesh.
I think they do. I think they do. But
okay.
I think it's
because
that, of
to
the,
me, is where it then becomes zombie.
Yeah, I know.
Well, you got a point. It could be considered more of a outbreak. I know I brought it up before.
Yeah, it's a pandemic.
I would say another top three when I was younger that got me into horror was Tremors. 100%. I feel like anyone can watch Tremors, even if you're not a horror fan, and still enjoy it. There is a splash of comedy in there, of course. You got really fun ensemble.
Yes.
But just the very concept of something could come up from the ground at any moment, swallow you whole. I think that works for everyone.
Yeah, and Tremors is a lot of fun. It is that borderline horror comedy, you know. I think it doesn't take itself too seriously, but it's grounded in that world, and the cast is great. I was gonna say Poltergeist would be a great entry, but you know, the real question here is, if people haven't been watching horror, is it because they don't like to be scared?
Yeah.
Or is it because they don't know where to begin? And that's why you pick something that's not going to be too, you know, terrifying psychologically, or...
triggering, I guess you could say, too. Because I think a lot of the reason a lot of people avoid horror, those who avoid it, is just because their own life has so much strife and horror,
right,
they don't want to then compound that. But from my perspective, my argument is that, yes, okay, things in my life are not perfect, and there's horrific aspects to it. But in compared to a movie like Martyrs, where someone's getting their skin ripped off, it's not so bad. Things aren't so bad. It puts things into perspective for me, and I feel a little bit better about my existence. So I think there's the flip side to that coin, where people are like, why would I want to put myself through this? How could I? That's why, because your life seems a
Martyrs
little bit
is,
more full of skin.
Rough.
And I also think people should, like we've talked about, just widening what you think a horror is. Brought it up before, but There Will Be Blood to me is a horror film. Start looking at some of these that might be considered by the masses as drama as more of a horror. I mean, granted, that might be a little more advanced once you know the tropes you're looking for. I was also thinking maybe Cabin in the Woods would be a good one to introduce, but at the same time, if you know the tropes of horror, then that movie becomes that much more satisfying. I remember...
Absolutely.
At U of I, I took a film class, intermediate film, I think it was, but they made us watch Near Dark. And that, to me, is a great entry-level horror film. For like vampire-slash-western combo, with great direction from Bigelow. Bill Paxton at his best.
Bigelow, yeah.
And I think that's great entry level if you're willing to go back to was probably like 88, 89 maybe. I can't remember exactly.
That sounds right. It sounds right.
But in terms of more contemporary ones, I think Green Room is one of the best entry level horrors because you don't see it coming, and it's a horror that is not supernatural in any way, and it is still so you're at the edge of your seat for the entirety of the movie. That to me is great entry level. Slither, if you want the comedy horror, I think Slither is a great one, especially for those of you who like Guardians of the Galaxy. You got James Gunn behind the camera here, with a really fun cast too: Elizabeth Banks and Nathan Fillion, and of course Pam from The Office.
From The Office.
I know I brought it up before, but we just mentioned the Alien films. But I also think those are good avenues in. I know I watched those really young.
I was
going
to say it, yeah.
My first date ever with Mara, I forced her to watch Alien, and she got through it. I will acknowledge the fact that when I tried to get her to watch Aliens, she fell asleep, which I think is pretty strange, given that one's more action-oriented. But I think it's because Alien is more horror. She couldn't shut her eyes. Another one she mentioned that really kind of converted her, I guess you will, was Host. During the pandemic, there was this movie, Host, that was released that was just so perfect for the time. When you get a horror that's reflective of what's going on in the real world, I think that can sometimes sway you. Barbarian was another one for her, because this is stuff that like is legitimately possible and scary. Maybe not the superhuman capacities of that old lady at the end there with the diving and such, but stuff that can really happen that is reflective of what's going on now, you know, that can pull you in, I think, to the genre.
No, those are great. Those are great. I was going to say Host, the Host was like the perfect film during the pandemic. I almost thought you were going to talk about the Korean movie Host, which is about like this giant sea
squid
serpent
thing. I haven't seen that in a long time. I can't remember whether that was great or not. Is it a great one?
It's super fun. Is super fun.
All right. Fair.
But yeah, like I think there are, I mean, other movies we've talked about, like whether it's part of our St. Patrick's Day movies. I was gonna say Grabbers, which is a super fun horror comedy. I tend to gravitate, when people ask me, I say Grabbers, I say Tucker and Dale versus Evil, because it has this, if you're not freaked out, you're laughing, you know. It keeps the movie going. There's a whole bunch of movies like that, and maybe we should start putting up a blog entry of stuff like this.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a huge Saw fan, but that first one, I feel like, I mean, it's dealing with morality issues. They take it to extremes in the latter versions, yeah. But that first Saw is just so strong. Again, it's when they have messages that go beyond the surface. I think it would be a hard one to entry level, but certainly Candyman with the racism and sexism there. I think American Psycho, if you're a fan of Christian Bale and you haven't seen that, that's entry level, I would argue. It's very psychological, but it is a horror at its heart, about corporate greed. Of course, The Shining, which we just talked about, I think that's very entry level. That could suck you into it as well. The two that I want to mention that I usually go to when I try and get people into it is The Fly. I think The Fly with Goldblum and Gina Davis can really get you into understanding what horror can do below the surface.
That's interesting.
Because you could look at it as, okay, this is kind of about cancer, but as a lot of horror directors have talked about, The Fly is really about love. And in the end, ultimately, like, when you love someone enough, you euthanasia sort of thing. You have to put them out of their misery sort of thing. The love relationship between those two is really what's at the center of, you know, a movie that's ostensibly about teleportation. And then, as we've talked a bajillion times, The Thing. You can't go wrong with The Thing as entry level, too, I would argue.
John Carpenter's
Especially if you're into the new Monarch show, you get your Kurt Russell there. If you haven't seen him in The Thing, you're gonna regret having not seen it, because it's top shelf.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I'm surprised you said The Fly, because I like, you don't really associate David Cronenberg films with, you know, films you'd recommend to somebody who doesn't like horror, as well as Saw. I mean, I think when people think of horror, they think of like body horror or like the torture horror, like your Saws or your
Hostels,
or they think really scary ghost stories. You know, like I would say like The Babadook is a really great movie to watch. It does have its creepy moments, but a lot of people who don't like horror or aren't watching horror don't like jump scares either. So I think you know, there are some other films out there, like I would say like The Invitation, which is really more of like a psychological horror. About
not the vampire one. Before.
No, not the vampire one. The dinner party one.
Yes, that is.
Which I think is you know, if for nothing else, if you're not enjoying the weirdness of it, the acting is really great and the directing is really great, and I think there's a bunch of movies like that. I was talking to somebody recently, and I think horror has gotten to a really great place where jump scares are fine and fun and whatnot, but they're so obvious now that we need to dig further. We need to go deeper into this genre, and like Jordan Peele doesn't tend to like survive on jump scares, you know? Like Nope had a good handful, but they were comedic, if nothing else. And the point is that they're so obvious now that horror movies are really kind of just being like better written and like more character driven, and if nothing jumps out and scares you, you're still going to be creeped out by the end of the movie.
I completely agree. I feel like it's the genre that's evolving more than any other genre, and that's one enough reason for me to continue being thankful for it. Which ones are you looking forward to that are coming out, given this is our Thanksgiving week episode? What are you thankful for and most hopeful for that's coming out in the near future or that you've heard about?
Well, in the near future, I'm very excited for Robert Eggers' Nosferatu. I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised. I think Robert Eggers is such a great writer-director, and I think we're going to see like a new spin on this, you know, this whole story of, you know, Dracula coming to London.
And of course, you got Skarsgård as Nosferatu. But what I find interesting is, like, as I just actually looked at the casting of it, I heard about the Skars, but I didn't know anybody else that was in it. Do you know who's playing Winona Ryder's part? From, you know, Bram Stoker's, with Gary, where Gary Oldman was Dracula. Lily Rose Depp apparently is going to have this role, and that's the role that Winona Ryder had. And considering Johnny Depp's, you know, having Winona forever on his, I just find it a little weird that like his kid is now taking the role of his ex-lover, girlfriend. And I don't know. Did you watch Lily Rose Depp's show on HBO?
I didn't.
Okay, all right. It's canceled.
Didn't make it too far. Yeah.
Yeah. Not great. Not great. But I'm curious to see if she could pull something off, because it doesn't seem like she's going anywhere. What do you think about this news that just dropped in the last 24 hours? Scream 7 casting. You hear about Melissa Barrera is out.
Did you also hear, while we were having this conversation today and recording this, Jenna Ortega just dropped out?
Oh, that sucks. I'd be surprised if it goes through now.
And I think it's horrible. in support of her on-screen sister being let go.
I guess it had to do with some tweet that she posted involving calling Israel, you know, ethnic cleansing sort of situation. I don't know why these actors do that when they're like just coming up to make some sort of like political faux pas.
I know. It's
Yeah, it sucks because I enjoyed her and I enjoyed her character. And of course, Jenna Ortega could do no wrong of late, it would seem. I don't know what they do. I don't know how you salvage Screen 7 without both of them, especially. I think you could have if Jenna stayed, but it just seemed so reliant on dealing with her mom, Melissa Barrera's mom specifically, I think was going to be a big part of it.
That, I mean, these sisters were basically our new Cindy Prescott. Like, we needed this family to kind of carry the story through. Otherwise, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Just jump off of this really quick. Wednesday would be a really great thing for someone who's looking for horror to start with on Netflix.
Tim Burton in general, I think you could argue.
Starting Jenna Ortega. Yeah. Yeah.
Give yourself some Sleepy Hollow. That's a beautiful intro.
Yeah.
It's beautiful tonally, aesthetically, everything. 100% on that one. Have you heard of this one coming out called Stop Motion?
I don't believe I have.
It sounds cool. Ultimately, it has Aisling Franciosi. I've seen her in a couple things. I actually do like her. But she's the stop motion director or you know, producer. And she starts having these strange like nightmares, and then the stop motion starts to come alive in real life, sort of thing. It sounds like a horrific Toy Story, but with claymation figures instead. That sounds very cool to me. They just dropped the preview for or the trailer for Imaginary. Did you catch it?
I haven't watched it yet. I am wanting to check that out. I mean, the poster really reminds me of like the poster from Sinister.
If it's anything like Sinister, it'd be cool. It'd be cool with it, but
yeah.
I don't have high hopes for it, if I'm honest with you. But I do love the idea of, you know, these parasocial, one-sided, imaginary friends potentially.
Yeah.
Going evil or whatever. There's another one that sounds pretty fun called "There's Something in the Barn." I think this comes out next month and in like a couple weeks.
I watched the trailer yesterday.
I didn't see the trailer. Like, what'd you see? It is a blast.
Okay. It stars Martin Starr,
who, a Freaks and Geeks fame.
But if you don't know him from that, he's one of the teachers in the new Spider-Man trilogy. He's basically
Down.
Yes, Party Down. This is about a family who inherits a home in Norway, and they're an American family. And there's a little boy who starts to notice things going on in the barn. He talks to a local, and the local's like, oh, that's like your barn. I don't know if he calls him a gnome or an elf, but basically he's upset because things are changing. And there's a list of rules of things that you shouldn't do if you want to keep this barn happy. And they basically break every rule. And I'm pretty sure it's a gnome because he's got the little hat on. And he just wants revenge. And he starts going after this family. It looks like a blast. It looks like... Tonally, it kind of reminded me of the Krampus movie that came out.
Oh, I love that.
A few years ago, Michael Dougherty's Krampus, which is super fun. It kind of reminded me of that, and a movie we watched recently about the Red Caps, which the name I'm forgetting about the family.
Yeah, I remember
Ireland.
That one. Yes, yes, yeah, I can't remember yeah. the name of it either.
It reminds me of a happy marriage between those two. It looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing him kind of drive a vehicle too, Martin Starr, because he's so fun.
Yeah.
Yes, another one coming out, Dev Patel's Rabbit Trap. Don't know much about it, but Dev Patel in a horror, haven't really seen much of that. That could be fun. And then in terms of our sequels and remakes, we got a new Omen coming out. The first Omen.
We have a new
that
Omen.
Could be good because it has Bill Nighy. I'd be surprised, you know, he was just up for Academy Award, for him to sign on for something that wasn't
he's
halfway
great.
Interesting. Megan 2.0. And...
Yes.
As we noted earlier, Beetlejuice 2 with Miss Ortega. So
we,
I think
also
we have a lot
have
to be thankful for in the horror verse.
The last thing I want to mention is Alien Romulus.
Oh,
and
yes.
This movie is directed by Fede Alvarez, who we are big fans of. The guy's been making horror movies forever now, and like I don't think he's made a bad one. And he did a screening for Ridley Scott, and Ridley Scott loved it.
Yes,
loved
I heard about
it.
This. One after him shook his hand, is all like, this was this is the best Alien since my first one.
Yeah.
Which is great.
So
given
very
that
excited.
He didn't want to give up the reins, you know what I mean? And then to then approve of it is, that's a big statement. So I'm very excited for that.
Yeah.
I know we had talked earlier about being a little nervous because the cast was skewing really young. But, hey, do what you got to do to keep the franchise alive and doing well. And I'm happy. I'm very thankful.
Yes, please.
Very thankful.
Thankful for horror. I'm thankful that we're really getting a new, like, golden age of horror right now. We're living in it.
Yeah, look for that elevated horror if you're trying to get into it. We forgot,
swimming,
of course, Ari Aster stuff. You can't go wrong with Hereditary or Midsommar. Yeah. Maybe not your first run, but once you get into it.
I was going to say... They're very shocking A24 films that they're very good, but you may not love them if you're just dipping your toes into the horror pool.
Yes. Touché. Well, I think that's that. I want to thank you guys for listening.
Yes.
Please subscribe and like and
thank you.
Send all of the fan mail to our P.O. box. And until the next time, stay alive.